Some of the largest tech companies in the world, like Facebook and Twitter, have faced dramatic criticism for not doing enough to crack down on questionable content. YouTube also falls into that category for not doing enough, critics argue, to address extremist views in videos and keep at least some of those items away from kids. The challenge may simply come down to a corporation trying to make as much money as possible. Mark Bergen of Bloomberg wrote a story about this, and he's with me via Skype. Mark, let's define the YouTube content we're talking about that has some people concerned.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it falls into two different categories broadly, like certainly the concern from both outside critics and then from people inside the company. You have political content that might touch the line of hate speech. And so it might be supporting, you know, certainly a topical issues and supporting white nationalism or white supremacy. And then on the other side, there's something that's been troubling for YouTube is content aimed at kids. That may be very disturbing. So it has, that could be like there were channels that were devoted to pranks where you saw kids and being forced to eat foods until vomiting, or like cartoon characters that have bloody violence, right? And so those are sort of on the fringes. And again, the issue here that both the critics and internal people voice is not necessarily that these live on the platform or that the videos remain on the site, but that the company and through its algorithms was actually recommending these videos to more viewers. Hmm. And that was sort of a contentious point and has been for years about the videos that are allowed to live on the platform, how YouTube actually just promotes them through its own machine learning systems.
I'm glad you mentioned how this has been going on for years, because that was actually going to be my next sort of basic question. Is this something that has been a concern since the platform was started, and certainly since it really took off and became ultra popular?
An interesting inflection point is, I want to say, 2011, 2012, with the Arab Spring, YouTube, like Facebook and Twitter, saw itself as a sort of very valuable tool in supporting democratic movements. And so there was a big push for governments to take down this video, a lot of video clips. And YouTube was actually strong in their position. No, we want these to remain on the platform. That sort of, cemented a philosophy of the company that we are a place where we respect freedom of speech. And, you know, you saw this kind of going up to the 2016 election. And that was another turning point where people outside the company certainly saw the issues with YouTube allowing this stuff to just continue to flourish. And there's a very different perspective since the 2016 election, the conversations that we've been having here in Silicon Valley, but also certainly in Washington, D.C. about misinformation and about sort of these digital platforms and how important they are.
And so YouTube internally, what are their thoughts on this? I interviewed recently an author of this book, Zucked, about how what Facebook is doing or not doing. And is YouTube taking this kind of thing seriously?
I would say yes. I mean, they certainly will say that in public statements and public comments. I think the major issue for the company is something similar to Facebook, is they don't necessarily know how to implement these changes. I think there's twofold. One is their entire business has been set up, like my reporting, a lot on these engagement metrics to sort of, they're you know, building this big infrastructure, and all the goals were to drive more people to view and drive them to watch videos longer. The second is they say something similar to Facebook, which is, we don't necessarily want a private company making what could be seen as censorship decisions or content decisions, right? They've been very reluctant to basically become a media platform and have editorial roles. And that's because at their size, they see that as an impossibility, and there's certain legal liabilities that have protected them from being responsible and liable for the content that's uploaded on their site. And so that's been a major reason why they haven't taken these steps. But I do think there are people there, and they certainly pay a lot of lip service to that they're looking at these issues around extremist content, around misinformation, and putting in places to deal with that.
So going to your Bloomberg piece, let me just read a little bit just to give listeners an idea here. Rather than revamp its recommendation engine, YouTube doubled down. The neural network described in the 2016 research went into effect in YouTube recommendations starting in 2015, and then jumping ahead to a quote from a computer scientist you spoke to, calling YouTube's AI system an addiction engine. And in some ways, one would think businesses want that, but then, you know, what happens? You mentioned responsibility. What happens in terms of backlash? Maybe just even in terms of reputation and perception. I mean, as a company that wants to make a lot of money, is there a feeling that they could pull back offend fewer people, make people feel mm-hmm. better about their kids being on the platform, or is that sort of a constant like devil on one shoulder, angel on the other?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at YouTube's business, they have this really interesting sort of three different constituents. They have the creators, what they call, which are the people that upload their videos, and these are sort of this army of quasi contractors. They're not employees, but and many of them are at this point like celebrities and stars. And then they have their advertisers, who are what's happening in the past few years is that there was this major advertising boycott. If you remember this controversy where some ads from marquee brands like Johnson & Johnson and AT&T were shown in front of jihadi videos. And so the advertisers have said, we want to have more assurances about which videos our ads run in front of. And then the creators are saying, we want, they're seeing their money slip away, and they've been complaining about how much YouTube keeps changing the rules. And the third tier is a sort of everyone else who watches these YouTube videos. And the company has been very concerned about sort of being seen as biased against conservatives. That's been a consistent theme coming from the White House and the Republican Party. And so, when I'm talking to a lot of people that have spent time at YouTube, they said those three things competing have caused a lot of paralysis in the company, where they're unclear, which sort of master to serve.
What kind of competition does YouTube face? For me, that's key in terms of whether YouTube is willing to pull back or feel like they're going to cede too much of the territory, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, when I talked to a lot of advertisers around this boycott, this consistent thing they said was, where else do we go? YouTube has this amazing audience. They've been able to tap into a younger audience that's no longer watching TV. So that's been a consistent problem, that they don't have any competition. And we don't. YouTube is part of Google. The company does not disclose how much revenue YouTube makes or how much money it loses. So we don't have any visibility into sort of these changes they're putting in and how much of that is affecting their business.
Mark Bergeron is a reporter for Bloomberg. We've been talking about his story with the headline, YouTube Executives Ignored Warnings, Letting Toxic Videos Run Rampant. Mark, thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks so much.